91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs. This is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jeff Beery.
I'm Jake Brownell.
And I'm Vicki Gregor.
Today on Air Check, we'll check out three very different styles of music that we're excited about in our roundtable music review. Songstress Sarah Cahoon hangs out with Vicki and performs a couple of tunes. John Bueno from Pueblo's Pulp Magazine chats with folk musician The Brightest Quasar. We have a talk with local producer Bill Douglas about working with Smashing Pumpkins frontman Billy Corgan. Also, Hannah Fleming will be juxtaposing the young and the oldish in our local music scene. All of that coming up on this edition of Air Check.
So, as usual, we begin the show with our musical roundtable, where we go around the table and each of us shares a song that we can't get out of our head from this past month. And why don't we just kick things off with you, Vicki?
The person I pick this time, her name is Joan Shelley. She's from Louisville, Kentucky. But I didn't know that for the longest time, because what you hear when you hear her sing is British folk rock. You think of Richard Thompson, Fairport Convention, some Nick Drake touches. And it's so cool because she brings Appalachia and, you know, a pub crawl in the UK together. And it sounds like something from the 60s. It's just beautiful. So this is Joan Shelley and If the Storms Never Came.
On an endless sea, deep in the night, when needed most, unsure you cannot be. Beneath the sighs of the widening skies, pray idleness would break. But just the scent, a gentle wind, to lead the coming rain. So how could you stand it? How could you stand it? How could you stand it if the storms never came?
Beautiful.
Wow.
It really is.
Yeah.
I know, and it freezes you in time. It's like a song that's frozen in time, produced by Jeff Tweedy. And his son Spencer plays drums on this as well. Jeff was so taken with some of her other music. He said, we need to work together.
Understandably.
So went to the loft where Mavis Staples and Richard Thompson have done their records. So clearly Jeff knows the touches to put on this.
Nice.
Yeah, the drums really did jump out at me. I love that. It's such a subtle touch. Trying to figure out how to fill out an acoustic kind of folk song like this is always a challenge, and just that little subtle bass drum and the soft snare with the brushes, it's a really nice touch.
What impresses me is the beautiful voice. She's got just a beautiful, angelic voice.
I've heard the word beguiling used, and I think I'd like to claim that, and I love the way they've all come together. It's they just play enough to serve the song and let her voice do what it does.
Nice pick.
Great pick.
Jake, what's your song for this roundtable?
Well, my song is by a band out of Philadelphia, as far as I can tell, although they seem to have a close relationship to New York City and the greater New York City area. The band is called Palm, and this is off a forthcoming EP called Shadow Expert, and the song is Walkie Talkie.
Thank you.
wild, right?
Yeah.
So one of the things that's really interesting about this band is they went to school together at Bard, and none of them are trained musicians, which is interesting because you hear it and it's got this really mathy, technical sound that feels like, you know, these are these prodigies, you know, doing what they do best on
especially
their instruments.
Especially the drummer.
The drums and those weird guitar lines and stuff. But apparently they're just kind of inventing it from whole cloth and making up this strange, totally captivating, experimental music.
It puts me in mind of some bands that also explore this. Like, I've gone from, like, Mogwai in my head to Dirty Projectors a little bit. But this is, like, full bore.
What sort of mood would you be in to listen to this music?
It'd probably be nighttime, and I'd be doing, you know, things to make and do. This would be a good soundtrack, because I'm going to have to stop, too, and pretend like I can do that drum pattern, which, of course, would look ridiculous, so I need darkness. I need the dark of night.
It's really not the kind of music that does well in the background, as far as I can tell. It's sort of it's an upfront kind of experience.
Yeah.
I like it, Jake. My brain must be wired for this, because that made total sense.
All right, Jeff, what'd you pick for us this
time? I picked an album from a fellow named Finn Greenall. Know the name Finn Greenall?
Mm-hmm.
He actually goes by Fink. So he's one of those one-name artists, and he's put out over 10 albums now, and this is off of his new album, Fink's Sunday Night Blues Club, and it's a song called Little Bump. So you know what I heard in this? My immediate recollection was Alan Lomax's field recordings, and that's what I hear in this, is sort of this almost Angola prison chain gang sort of steady hit. It's moody.
It is moody. Definitely has a real thick atmosphere to it.
I think I know what he's singing about there, and he really serves the lyric with that. And it's just great to, you know, kind of hear that drum, that snare, or whatever, do its thing, and then all of a sudden there's like a, you know, kind of cool, you know, it's a blues thing, but it's really haunting.
You know, he's worked as a producer. He's worked with Ryuichi Sakamoto. He's worked with Elbow. He's co-wrote songs with Amy Winehouse. He produced our old friend Robert Belfour, so he did some time with Hill Country Blues, worked at Def Jam and Sony Records. So he started in the music industry in a whole different light.
It's interesting how that's not a very common occurrence, people kind of moving their way from behind the scenes.
It's almost backwards.
Into the foreground, yeah. But you would think it would happen more often, because these are the people who are really the engine behind a lot of the pop music that we hear and a lot of the great songs that we hear.
I'm not doing dishes to this. This is going to be sitting in a armchair, most likely.
Rocking.
Staring into the abyss. No. But you know what I mean? This is a very settle down kind of thing.
Three very different types of music, this this round table.
That's the power of song. Put them all together, you have a music show.
That's right. That concludes this month's musical roundtable. You're listening to 91.5 KRCC's Air Check.
Not okay.
Sarah Cahoon grew up in Colorado. She's since moved on to the Pacific Northwest, where she now lives in Seattle. Sarah made a name for herself as a drummer in the band Band of Horses, and then turned to her own solo career, releasing three records on Seattle-based Sub Pop Records. Her most recent album, From Where I Started, is a richly layered indie folk confection full of personal songs of love, loss, and longing. Cahoon's recent tour brought her through Colorado Springs, and she stopped in to play a few songs and talk with Vicki Gregor.
Hey, my name is Sarah Cahoon. This song is called Better Woman.
Coat's all wrong, shoelace untied. I chased you half a mile down on the roadside. I know you've tried to make me understand that I treat you less than kind. Dogs on the couch by the fireplace, and the candles burning down where you let it lay. Well, I know you've tried. Make me understand that I treat you less than kind. I rest my head on the collar of your favorite shirt. It's enough to make everything else go away. So I'll step on up and be a better woman in your eyes. From now on, I'm gonna love everything about you.
I'm in the studio today with Sarah Cahoon and Alex Guy. Sarah has a new record called From Where I Started. She's a incredibly talented singer-songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, And I must say, this is such a beautifully written and produced and sung record. And I think what I was struck by is it's so personal. There's such amazing revelation and depth in it. It's such a beautifully revealing record.
Thank you. I mean, it definitely is one of my most personal records, I think, that I've done. So a lot of it is very true. And it took me 5 years or something to have a new record. So there's a lot of ups and downs that happen in that amount of time.
Really? So, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Do you have to kind of sit and judge it as you go when you're writing a song? Is it just let the words come and do what they do and then go back and edit? Or do you just say, I'm committing to just say what I say?
You know, it takes me, you know, some songs take me quite a long time to finish, and I kind of put them off for a long time, and I don't really think about them for a while. And sometimes I have to make sense of them, and so sometimes the words come out quickly, but for the most part, it's kind of just like it's like they evolve every year, I would say, you know, to new life. And
so there's a lot to be said for having some time
yeah.
to go ahead and write your next record as
yeah.
opposed to, uh-oh, I've got one due in a year.
Yeah, I don't write that way. I was kind of like going through a little bit of a time where I didn't even know if I was going to want to do another record because I kind of wanted to do some other stuff and play some drums for people or just do a side project or something. So I'm happy that I did. And you know, so.
So am I.
Yeah.
So are we all. I wanted to ask you, you know, there's certain words that conjure up, I guess, or suggest indie or indie pop sensibility. And I think of, you know, Seattle and KEXP and Sub Pop and Band of Horses, which you drummed with. But this record reminded me or brought to mind of some of the things that are really lovely about J.J. Cale, Graham Parsons at times, Emmylou Harris. And I just wondered what that process was to go from such a, you know, quote unquote, indie scene to, you know, something that maybe seems more like a porch in Appalachia or Americana, for lack of a better word.
I think I do feel like a lot, all my records have an Americana feel. Mm-hmm. They're pretty Americana-ish. So I was on a pretty indie label. So it's kind of just this funny world of, I think it's just like this record is more, you know, I self-released it and kind of just wanted to get it to more of a different audience, you know, folk audience than I did before. But as in, like, all my records, I think, do have a lot of Americana and roots to them. But it's just didn't really always get to the right audience sometimes, I think.
Right, or maybe that suggests if you have a label like Sub Pop, is it even the people that you might cross paths with or work with as far as who might be, you know, at the office one day when you stick your head in or at the studio?
Yeah, I think that it's just, you know, I was pretty young, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think that I've just grown a lot as a person and just more just trying to figure out where I land. You know, I think that I did drum for a lot of bands and indie rock. I definitely have that side of me in that scene. So it's kind of just, and I think that I just played with a lot of bands and kind of just went with what they're doing. And mm-hmm. you know, like of course it was like super exciting to be on Sub Pop, and I love them. They're like my best friends, and it was the best experience, and I still work with them. But I think it's just I think I've just grown a lot as an artist as well, and playing for the right people has been a big thing that I think I'm figuring out more.
Alex, I wanted to ask you something. Alex, background vocals, violin, fiddle. Can I say that word? Fiddle? No, it's fine.
You can. No, it could be either one. It's really just how you play it usually.
How did you find each other? How did you first hear about Sarah or, you know, come into the musical fold that way?
Well, we met a few years ago through a mutual friend of ours who's a musician that I've toured with. And then we just kind of reconnected this winter. Like, Sarah came to a show that I played, and then we started hanging out and talking about music. And I don't know. And then she went crazy and asked me to play in her band and regretted it ever since, I think.
I could tell. Yeah. I could tell that.
Yeah, totally.
Sarah, Alex, I really thank you for being here with us in the studio.
Oh,
it's a pleasure.
Thanks for the support.
And again, the name of this wonderful new record, From Where I Started, apropos in many ways, we'll be playing that one a lot.
Thank you very much.
And let's take it out with another song.
All right, the song is called Dusty Lungs. The very young, no one's ever gonna have you for
That was 91.5 KRCC's music director Vicky Greger talking with Sarah Cahoon and Alex Guy about Cahoon's most recent album, From Where I Started. It was released in March. This is Air Check. Stay with us.
From 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs, this is Air Check, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Vicky Greger.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Jake Brownell.
Jake, you recently spoke with John Bueno, the writer at Pueblo's Pulp magazine, about a new emerging musician named The Brightest Quasar. I've heard bits and pieces of his music, and he has a lovely Sun Kill Moon quality. How did he end up on John's radar?
Well, it was kind of by accident, actually. The Brightest Quasar records and releases his music himself and has practically no internet presence besides a lone Bandcamp page. And John was surfing the web and discovered this and discovered that this beautiful music was being made by a Pueblo-based musician and decided he had to learn more. And we wanted to learn more, so I gave John a call and he told me the story.
In swollen creeks I've settled down. Another year upon the crown.
You know, I go through releases digitally, and a lot of them will have Facebook and Twitter attachments on them. This gentleman had nothing. All I could do was actually just send a question through the Bandcamp site that I was on, and I kind of hope he responded to me. So it was kind of a mystery.
What is it about the Brightest Quasar sound that appealed to you?
You know, once you get into it, it's really interesting that there's a lot of space in the music. You know, I feel like we're really oversaturated on every different level a lot of the time. And it's really cool to hear something that actually gives itself breathing room. And musically, that's one of my favorite things that the Brightest Quasar offers.
So the Brightest Quasar, he lives in Pueblo. What else do you know about sort of his background, what he does for a living, that kind of thing?
He works for a place here called Campbell's Flowers. But he's a permaculture fan, so he's really interested in the idea of sustainable floral culture. He's really just a really fascinating person. Yeah, I mean, he just had a daughter, and he's looking to find his bearings and stuff like that. He moved here from Boulder, so.
In your article, you made a lot of sort of the fact that he doesn't really seem to have much of a presence online. As someone who spends a lot of time trying to find new artists and discover music, is that unusual?
It's very, very unusual. You know, I mean, that's the game now. There's really no other way to get it done anymore, it seems like, which I think is kind of refreshing. You know, music used to be stuff you read in catalogs. You know, I remember back in the day finding my new favorite bands because the bands I already liked had thanked them in the liner notes of their recordings and stuff like that. So it used to be kind of like a almost secretive thing. You know, you had to search it out. And it was kind of like a novel throwback for me to get to do that again.
Back to the good old days.
Exactly.
So you met up with the Brightest Quasar at a coffee shop and just sort of got to know him a little bit?
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, we're going to take a listen to some excerpts from that conversation, which you kindly provided. John Bueno, writer at Pulp Magazine in Pueblo, thanks so much for tipping us off to this, and let's take a listen.
It's just ironic because I tried for so long with bands and playing out, and then I have a kid and stop.
Okay.
And then somebody talks to me.
If that my love won't fade away, if that my light won't go out someday, it's all you knew, you'd be fine.
So did you have a kid move back to this area? Or?
No, I've just been bouncing around Colorado. My family's been in the Spring since 98. I'm from New Jersey, and so been here almost 20 years. And then we bought some land south of here that we put a yurt up on, want to make an organic farm. And Pueblo is like the biggest, closest city to, because it's south of Walsenburg. So
absolutely.
It's like, kind of moved here without knowing anything about it.
Right, sure. How do you feel about it now?
It depends on the day. I like this charm about here that you can't quite put your finger on.
Yeah.
I guess. Like, I don't know if it's like the, maybe something, the wind, like the location or something like that.
Sure.
It's very much its own animal down here. Baby. I mean, she's two, so my first kid. Do you have kids?
Or
it changes things, like,
sure.
Kind of a lot. Like, I'd say whatever you did before, say 90% of it has to squeeze into 10% of your life now. So things just, a lot of stuff gets shelved. I mean, if they sleep good, that's your break,
sure.
You know, so
absolutely.
You're like, a lot of that recording I did at night, but I live 700 square foot house.
Okay.
You're not screaming, you're not like singing your heart out
sure.
when the baby's asleep.
Absolutely.
So, wife went out of town and I just had some beers and made stuff happen.
Okay. But. So is that why the Brightest Quasar is the way, is that your aesthetic, like don't wake the baby?
It's gotten softer, like softer's better, like I don't listen to metal anymore without headphones. I don't have any money, so now it's just home recordings. And
I mean, I think you really captured something really fantastic.
I'm trying. There's... I mean, I've probably written hundreds of songs,
sure.
You know, I'd say my first 50 were kind of a My Bloody Valentine tribute, you know,
okay.
That's like,
that's
you
awesome.
Know,
yeah.
You gotta get that out of your system, like,
sure.
Loveless, and just like,
sure.
Gotta pay homage to them for the first three albums, and then you can develop your own sound, so. So, yeah.
Do you feel like you're developing it now?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe, like, I don't... Some of the stuff I record, like, on a listener side of it, they wouldn't know that there could be 10 years between track one and track
absolutely.
Two, you know? And so the sound, like, it's changing, but it's kind of always been the same because stuff that's 10 years old still fits. But all the songs are alive.
Landed a job in the winter as a greenhouse clerk. Steel City, this startup, it was good to find work. Since 82, this town's been returning to the earth. It's been forgotten by everyone except those like it in the world.
I think lyrically, I'm pretty influenced by Herman Hesse and Khalil Gibran, if you're familiar
yeah,
with those.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
Nature is never very far from them. They're always like pulling it in.
Absolutely.
And like, and I'm obviously not in their league, but I'm playing the same game
sure.
with like that type of content because I really go for that kind of like timeless quality. So.
Do you feel like it's kind of hard to ascertain or something you had to like really think about?
Not anymore. Like for a minute, I was like consciously making a switch between just like relationships and high school,
sure.
yeah, like,
sure,
you know,
sure.
which, I mean, has its place, but I'm maturing into, no, now I think it comes pretty easy.
Okay.
Yeah, it's almost, I mean, it's like a parable, like almost anything you want to talk about, you can talk about with something else,
sure.
you know, so you can talk about anything with nature.
Be the strength to grip this town from the bottom. Spanning volcanic rocks to the north, they're draining the Canadian vibes. They mix them up again.
I think this was a great conversation.
Yeah,
I really appreciate you talking to me.
Down in Arizona, they're spanning volcanic rocks to the north, they're draining the Canadian vibes. They mix them up together and they stick to my tribe.
That was John Bueno of Pueblo's Pulp magazine speaking with Pueblo-based musician The Brightest Quasar. You can read John's full story about The Brightest Quasar online at pulpnewsmag.com. From 91.5 KRCC, this is AirCheck.
We often make the mistake of thinking of Colorado as pretty far removed from national artists and that little to nothing happens here in southern Colorado that affects the larger music scenes of bigger cities and pop culture. But there is talent in plain sight right here in southern Colorado that is oftentimes quite surprising. Case in point is Bill Douglas. Bill's a music engineer and producer who has worked with such greats as NSYNC, R. Kelly, and the Smashing Pumpkins. Vicky recently sat down with Bill to talk about music production and the many different hats that one sometimes has to wear when working in the music industry.
You know, Bill, I've been using the word producer. We hear the term music producer attached to recordings and bands and records. What is a producer? What is that role?
The producer kind of is the organizer and is the one who keeps track of what's going on with the project. And, you know, he needs to know what's been done and what needs to be done. But in addition to just that simple stuff, he'll have the ideas. Oh, let's put a little 35 millisecond delay on whatever instrument, you know, and just crazy ideas like that they may have. And producers are oftentimes engineers. They can be referees between the band members. They can be your counselor. So, yeah, a producer is many things.
When you work with an engineer, when there's a separate engineer and you're separately the producer, then you two are really going off together to discuss sound, levels, instrumentation, some corrections you might want to make with the engineer. Does that mean you pick a favorite engineer, or does that go project to project if you're not the engineer? Do you have people you like to work with?
That can change, I guess, project to project and depending on the artist, too. Maybe the artist is seeking this engineer and this producer, or I wear both hats all the time, and I can, you know, at my studio, it's a small studio, but we have big results, and it's just me there. So I am the producer and the engineer.
You've gone on to work with some people in your career that would be considered famous or, you know, nationally known, certainly. Do you want to speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, when I worked in Chicago at both Streeterville Studios and Chicago Recording Company, CRC, I got to work with many, many different artists and producers and engineers. And this is, you know, after I had graduated from taking out the trash. So now I was able to hang out in sessions and actually, you know, observe and be more useful as an assistant engineer. So that entailed setting up microphones, you know, documenting settings, doing recalls, more stuff like that. And I got to work with the Smashing Pumpkins quite a bit.
Oh, wow.
And I got to work with them on an album called Adore that didn't make the album, but it made like a greatest hits. And then they later did Machina, and I was the assistant engineer for that. And that was a really proud album to be a part of.
Yeah, that record lives here at 91.5 KRCC. It's a good one.
Yeah, I love that record.
Can I ask something? You're talking about Smashing Pumpkins. Billy Corgan?
Yes.
Don't tell any stories you shouldn't tell. But he comes in with incredibly precise ideas, right? And he's a producer himself, isn't he? He has some ideas that way. Does that cause pressure in the studio? Or is that cool to have someone in the band or the band be so definite about what they're going for?
I think that's good. I think he knows what he wants, and he's able to communicate his ideas to the engineers and producers in order to shape that sound. And it's good that he has a knowledge, because I think the work gets done more efficiently since he's able to communicate on the same level as engineers and producers, since he is one.
When you find yourself in a time like now where a lot of people can just make their own records, you know, and sometimes, a lot of times, do it really well, where do you see the role of the producer?
I think what I can bring to the table most is tone. I like things to sound very good, and I like to take the time to make sure they do sound good and I have the right tools to make things sound great. And I think that's, you know, if nothing else, I can offer that.
Is there a instrument or instruments that you yourself play?
I play the drums.
So that must be a real joy, miking those drums, getting it down.
It's one of my favorite things.
Right.
I got the really my favorite drum miking setup and everything I've wanted over a long time I've collected, and the drums are primarily like my favorite thing to record.
Bill, I was wondering, I think about some bands, musicians that you've worked with, for instance, NSYNC, R. Kelly, and I'm wondering, what was that process like?
I think R. Kelly is a good example.
I used to think that I could not go on.
His stuff sounds very good because... he had a great team, like writers and a MIDI orchestrator, and you know I was an assistant to him, to Peter Mokrin, and to Stephen George, and he had some amazing engineers. But I think they all spent time, well spent time. Maybe not a lot of time, but you know maybe they take breaks. There's plenty of breaks, so their ears are fresh all the time, and then they. You know, they could take a month to do a song, in R. Kelly's example, just to mix it. But it just, it takes time and fresh ears, I think. And when you have his kind of money, you can book that room for a month and just go in whenever you please.
Spread my wings and fly away. I believe I can soar.
So do you think there's a lot to be said toward investing that kind of money and time into being able to step away from whatever it is that you're working on, even if you're not R. Kelly and have everything that goes with it, to be able to say, and especially I think as a producer, to say, okay, we need to stop for tonight, or we need to take separate corners. You know, I know as the clock is ticking sometimes, maybe a band isn't... you know,
I think it's a per band, per incident, per night. It could be a different response every night of the week. I don't know when you call it. You just feel it. And if you're, I don't know, you know, sometimes we work till 1-2 in the morning at my place. And sometimes we feel like we've done everything we needed to do by 10, and then we're good to go. But to go back to your other question, one of the records that sounded best to me that probably took tons of time to manufacture was Madonna, Ray of Light. And that album is just sonically, it's just perfect. Everything about it is perfect. My ears don't get tired, even if it's at a loud volume, and I appreciate the production and all the engineering that went into that record.
And that's William Orbit connected.
Yes.
Who makes pretty nice little records on his own, too.
interesting
that you named that. That's definitely one of my favorite records, and certainly
so
one
well
of my favorite
done.
Madonna records. Well, thank you so much for being in here today and doing this episode of Air Check.
Thanks.
That was Vicky Gregor speaking with producer Bill Douglas about his passion and his life's work. This is Air Check on 91.5 KRCC. 91.5 KRCC in Colorado Springs. This is AirCheck, a show about great music in the Pikes Peak region and beyond. I'm Jake Brownell.
I'm Vicki Greger.
And I'm Jeff Beery.
For our final segment, we take a look at the many stages of a rock and roll career. 91.5 KRCC's Hannah Fleming wanted to explore the question of how an artist's relationship to their music and the music business changes over time. So for this piece, she sat down with Chuck Snow, a legend in the Colorado Springs music scene, who's been playing in bands here since the 1980s, as well as members of the band The Youthful Nothings, who are just getting started in their music careers.
You're young, you're in a punk band, and it's basically your ethos not to care about anything but the music ahead of you. One minute, you're losing yourself on stage, and the next, you're looking over your shoulder reflecting on the mayhem in your past, on the cycle of writing, recording, and touring. You clear the phlegm off your vocal cords, restring your guitar, and repeat the cycle again, this time with feeling.
Ghost that I've seen, a shadow in the doorway.
Chuck Snow has been a guitarist and vocalist in beloved local bands for many years, including the SIDS and the Auto Know. These days, he works at Independent Records and continues to release his own music. He leads a quieter life now than he once did, but still has the occasional flashback.
Spent last night huffing spray paint. We were painting shirts for Record Store Day, and you have 15 or 20 people in a room with spray paint cans and no ventilation, and it took me back.
This is Chuck Snow's band that he started in 1983, The Auto Know. He's on vocals and guitar. I talked to Snow first and then brought in fresh-faced punk rockers The Youthful Nothings, which consists of Michael Miller, Quentin Michael Gamer, and Will Achoki. I spoke to Miller and Gamer in the studio at KRCC, where they brought a pack of Oreos to sustain them during the interview.
Yeah, I don't know if I quite know anybody who's 50 yet, but...
The members of the Youthful Nothings are 19 and have already recorded a full-length album, Neverland. At the studio, they tell me a little bit about what it was like starting the band in middle school, the reaction from fans in Colorado Springs and Denver, and what music means to them.
I'm Tommy Ratt, a.k.a. Quentin Gamer. I play bass guitar and I do a little singing sometimes.
And I am the Groovy Panda, they call me, and my real name is Michael Miller. And I play guitar, and I mainly sing and do the screamy stuff. And then our absent drummer is Jason the Wizard, and he's not here. I think he's in China or California or something. I grew up in, like, the upper middle class kind of suburb area, so it was, like, a lot of white privileged kind of stuff. And so all those rich people kind of got on my nerves. So then when I got into, like, being more free-forming and having, like, a computer and, like, you know, being able to do my own research and have my own thoughts, I, like, discovered all of this angry music that they called punk. And, yeah, the rest is history, I guess.
I'm just a kid. Lord, I think I'm overused. I'm just a kid.
How long have you been playing guitar?
Let's see, I started... I don't know, I would probably say 40 years. I think I started when I was about 15. Actually, at the time, it was a big craze at the time with the movie Deliverance. Everybody wanted to play banjo. My brother had picked up a banjo, you know, and I was like, hey, that might be kind of cool. But then I got an electric guitar, and I was like, oh, this is a lot better. So I just started basically playing that way with no thoughts of being in a band or trying to make a career out of it. My father was a longtime musician, so it's kind of been in the family. At that point in time, it was really cool. Now it's like you think about it and you're like, oh yeah, maybe I should have listened to my dad when he said it was going to be hard, a hard life for a musician.
I'm not growing up, I'm just...
Well, like 14 to 16, I really liked Green Day a lot. I was a big Green Day fan. And then I kind of got out of that, and I got more into older stuff, like Black Flag and like Minor Threat, Bad Brains, and that kind of music. And when I got into that, I started trying to like focus on like what was going on around. And I kind of got into this band, Murder Hat. Actually, the bassist for Murder Hat, his daughter turned out to be one of my friends. And then a couple years down the line, he ended up giving me like all this equipment for free. And so now it's like I'm using the stuff that I used to watch on stage. And yeah, it's kind of cool.
So when you were first getting started back in the 80s, what constituted making it for you?
I think initially it was not having to play in clubs. They do these rotations where you would do Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday nights, which back in the day, I mean, it doesn't sound like anything now because nobody really goes out on those nights anymore. But back at that time period, you could get a crowd on those nights. So you would go into a club and you'd play those for a year or so until they finally figured out, well, maybe they're good enough for midweek. So then they'd give you midweek, and then finally you'd work to the weekend. So one of the early stepstones was just being able to play on a weekend and getting paid good money, opening shows for other bands. Back in the day, we opened for a band called the Del Fuegos and the Bodines and, you know, bands like that. And that was a real stepping stone to that. So those were goals. And, you know, when you're a big fish in a small pond, it's easy to feel, you know, self-important and, you know, like, we're on our way. You know, we did some shows at the Glenn Miller Ballroom up in Boulder. We played with NXS at the Air Force Academy, that sort of thing. And, yeah, you feel then like, you know, that's, we're making it or whatever. But, you know, it's a long way to the middle if you want to rock and roll, basically. It's through down that street,
just like people you might meet. I think making it is all in your head.
Yeah.
You can be in what's considered by most to be like the worst band around and think that you've made it, and you can be in what's considered to be the best band around and think that you're a complete failure. I think it really matters about, you know, it just depends how you look at it.
Like, I don't know, the music industry I think is whack. I think there's a lot of fake personalities on social media, or not just that, but people like try to act all sweet and like suck up to their fans and like be all cutesy on social media, and it's like, I don't know, I just think it's kind of gross.
What would you say you miss the most?
Being young. Yeah, it's a lot of miles it's a lot of punishment on your body, and that's like a lot of these guys you see now are, you know, they die a little earlier. It's because of all the stress and abuse they put on their bodies young. And so, yeah, I miss being young and having that energy. I still enjoy playing, and, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I guess that's just one of the things. When you're young, you just kind of have that magic, and you feel like anything's possible. And then later on, when you get, you know, reality slaps you around a while, you kind of figure it out. So what's left of a heart? Something that's been handed down. It's all that's left to you now.
So you've been around for 3 years, but you're still kind of like fresh, young faces on the scene.
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I've always felt like because we're not 21, that people don't really take us so seriously.
But, you know, whatever, you pay your dues, so.
Oh, at we played a show at Larimer Lounge. We were loading our stuff in, and this guy came out, and he, like, tried to buy us all drinks. But me and Michael are under 21, and he was just like, keep doing what you're doing. And that kind of, we were all like, wow, that felt really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool when people come out to you, and they, like, look at your eyes, like, they look dead into your soul, and they're like, keep doing what you're doing, like, you know, like,
especially the older crowd. We get that the most from the older crowd.
Yeah.
When I was 25, you know, which now is a lifetime to me ago, I was like, what are you doing? I woke up one morning and I remember just thinking, what are you doing? You know, this is ridiculous. Oh my God, you're almost 30. You've got to stop this, you know? And yeah, that went on for about a year. And then I kind of forgot about it again. Everybody in my family plays music. My father was a musician. He was in an army band. He had dance bands. My brothers, you know, I'm related to Hank Snow, the country singer, so it's kind of like in the blood. I never could quite quit, but there were many times where I was just like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing it? But thankfully, it lasted long enough to know that I'm doing it because I enjoy doing it, and that's what I'm best at. And someday when I'm in a nursing home, you know, if I don't have Alzheimer's, I'll have a lot of great memories. I don't have any money, but the memories sustain you, and one good show outweighs 20 bad shows.
I would say my only plan for the future is to keep playing music.
Yeah, that's pretty much
point.
It. I'm going to school for music, and so I'm a music teacher. Like, music surrounds my entire life. It's what I've been doing since I was 10 years old. And even before then, when I was 8, I was playing Guitar Hero for the 2 years before I was 10.
Yeah, Guitar Hero,
you know?
That's where it all started. That's where it all started.
I'll be in a band till the day I die, even if the records I make just sit on top of my shelf and I'm the only one who listens to them.
That was 91.5 KRCC's Hannah Fleming speaking with local musicians Michael Miller and Quentin Gamer of the band The Youthful Nothings, and Chuck Snow, longtime frontman of the Colorado Springs band The Auto Know.
That's it for this episode of Air Check on 91.5 KRCC. Be sure and check out the website for pictures of the bands, videos of our favorite picks, and links to artists' websites. You can download our podcast by searching AirCheck in the iTunes store. Thanks for listening. I'm Vicki Greger.
I'm Jeff Beery.
And I'm Jake Brownell.